Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs.
Issue 149.
Matt Scalise, editor of filmnerds.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Matt.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Well, we're a little bit late probably on this, but a few days late, I guess. But we both saw Doctor Strange, and we both love Marvel movies, no matter if they're good or not. So I guess we should talk about this one.
I'm really excited to talk about it, Ben.
Yeah, me too.
I do have the hiccups for some reason, so that'll make this a fun podcast.
Excellent radio. Mind over matter, Matt. You should be able
That's
to
right.
control that at this point in your training.
Yeah.
So I guess off the top, we'll just go ahead and say spoilers. So we'll just talk about everything about this movie. This is a B to even C level character for Marvel. They have apparently a license to do anything they want at this point. So they went and made this wacky wizard movie. Matt, did this movie elevate the character of Doctor Strange to that, not maybe the Iron Man level, but close to that level? Did it do for Doctor Strange what James Gunn did for Guardians of the Galaxy, for example?
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy, it's so funny to talk about all these movies because I think, especially when you see them launching a movie franchise, it's a different movie than when we get into the business of sequels and Avengers movies in particular, because they're telling different types of stories. You know, I think with these initial franchise launchers, there's a lot that has to be done in terms of character building, and I think when you hear people criticize the weakness of villain characters in Marvel movies, a good bit of that is because these movies where they're introducing a new hero and a new franchise that they're trying to launch, and I think the bulk of the movie's time they feel needs to be dedicated to developing this character and making us like him and care about him and care about where he comes from, so that we're willing to go back and see him in more movies. And that might come at the expense of having a more well-developed villain, which I think it probably does. But I'm fine with it because I really like the Doctor Strange character, but more so his arc in this movie. And I think, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy is probably a good example, if only because before this one, Guardians of the Galaxy to me was the most comic book feeling movie that the Marvel Cinematic Universe had offered us yet. It was just so not afraid to throw completely bizarre, weird stuff at us. Visually weird, narratively weird, and yet still address us as real people interacting in this situation. You know, it's completely bizarre imagery. It's surreal stuff, but the characters who are in it are at least grounded to some extent. I think Guardians of the Galaxy did a great job of that. I think Doctor Strange is even more bizarre, and yet it remains to me, a very accessible movie. It's a movie with a familiarly structured plot, and yes, the theme of sort of an arrogant person learning that he doesn't know everything about the world, it's a familiar theme. I personally like it a lot, and I think they pulled it off well. You know, I have to say, Ben, I used to come at these things, at these movies, with almost a level of hostility, saying, like, look, I don't care if you made this movie for fans of the existing property. I'm a moviegoer. I want this to work as a movie. And now that I have, in the ensuing years, become a big comic book fan, it's hard for me to know exactly how this movie would be received by somebody who has never read any Doctor Strange before, doesn't know anything about the Sorcerer Supreme or the Ancient One, or you know, things like the astral form and stuff like that. I'm really, I would say, watching it as me, as somebody who is familiar with those elements, I still think the experience of watching the movie is pretty amazing, in that these are some really bizarre elements to be introducing into a relatively mainstream, you know, action adventure movie. But I'm really curious, as, you know, somebody who's less familiar with the source material, how that stuff reads and whether it makes any sense.
I mean, I don't know, but it seems like it did a pretty good job, because what, it made like $83 million this weekend?
Yeah, it opened one of their better opening, you know, new franchises that they've had.
Yeah, and the people that I went with were, you know, marginally familiar with it, but not really intimately, you know, with the comics or anything, and everybody seemed to have a really good time. So I think it's playing really well because, and it's one of those, you mentioned it already, but it's a two-edged sword, I guess. What they did was they Trojan horsed in all of these crazy ideas about multiverse and, you know, all this insane visual stuff and ideas about time and belief and all these things. They Trojan horsed those things in with a story that is pretty rote and pretty standard. And I think that it's that story that keeps people grounded, like you said, and keeps it popular. However, I do feel like there were plenty of moments in the film where I wasn't entirely engaged because of that familiar story, or maybe it's something else we can kind of get into it. But it's hard for me to discuss the movie, honestly. It's been kind of hard for me to think about it because it does feel like two totally separate things. One of which I'm certainly not negative on. It's just I'm just less enthusiastic. But then the other side, which is the ideas and the visuals, I am entirely over the moon and just blown away by. Do you have any of that kind of tension going on in your head?
I mean, I would say that they definitely feel different. I watching this movie, the character dynamics are a lot less, I guess, compelling to me than Guardians of the Galaxy or Civil War that we just saw. And it's a very different movie than either of those. It's introducing a bunch of new characters, and it's also not designed to be quite as lighthearted in tone as Guardians of the Galaxy. I don't think that anybody else, any other movies in the MCU will be, but I think it's a bit of a dark story. You know, it's about as dark as you're going to get for the MCU, because it's a guy who loses everything and is at the edge of, you know, depression, and basically has to let go of all of that. It's very much about the darker side of life, and when things aren't.
I mean, is it really that much darker than Iron Man 2 or Incredible Hulk?
I mean,
Incredible Hulk, he's driven to suicide.
Hulk is definitely up there with this too. I think certainly it's a darker movie than Iron Man. This is a darker character than
Iron Man 2, where he's like dying and he's got like weird metal cancer or whatever.
I just think he's still very quippy, and even though we do get a little bit of that in here, there's a lot of nihilistic talk at various points of the movie. But I think yes, the story is nothing that's going to blow you away or shock you in terms of how the story plays out. It feels like a summer movie when you watch it, and the only thing that's surprising about it really is when you get into these incredible visuals, but in particular,
yeah,
there's a moment when he sort of decides to fight the ultimate evil in this movie, Dormammu, and the sequence leading up to that is pretty much the craziest thing I've ever seen in a $100 million plus budget movie.
Yep. Yeah, where there's a fight scene happening in backwards time.
There's a time loop. There's a time loop happening, which makes sense, by the way, when you're watching it. At least it makes enough sense that you get what's going on.
Yeah,
there's,
absolutely.
There's also just the imagery of him being split into multiple images, and there's, you know, a tunnel of light that is, you know, very, very much something out of 2001. And, you know, I think this is something that Scott Derrickson clearly had some creative freedom. And actually, rewatching Ant-Man this week, you know, there's a sequence in that, too.
Yeah.
That is very, very reminiscent of what we get here. This is just, I think it's just to the next level.
Yeah, yeah, this makes that look tame. This makes that look like the most, like 7 p.m. NBC sitcom scene.
But I think that's encouraging to me in part because so much of what, I think when you hear about the malaise of audiences towards superhero movies, which is the thing people keep talking about, even though it doesn't actually happen with Marvel.
Yes, exactly.
But
yeah.
I keep reading stories about how people are tired of superhero movies. I think they're tired of bad superhero movies.
Right.
And what one of the reasons Marvel keeps making this work is they are going to different places with it. And the structures might feel similar. They might feel familiar. But they're going to give you stuff in here that is nerdy. It is weird. You know, they're not afraid to embrace their origin as comic book material, which is inherently a little bit fringe and a little bit outside of what people are expecting, especially something like Doctor Strange, which is, you know, all about sort of fringe culture. And I think this is kind of the Starbucks, McDonald's version of psychedelic art, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, what's interesting to me about this whole thing, which unfortunately it does feel like, I mean, it's dominated our conversation so far, it does feel like so much of the conversation about Marvel movies now is about, you know, what's quote-unquote wrong with them, you know? And it's like, I guess this is the conversation we have when we have 15 of something or 14 of something. And we just have to...
It's its own genre, basically.
Yeah, we have
to
defend its existence every time out. But I feel like they've done this thing where they take risks with every movie, but they always take calculated risks, and they never make a 100% risky movie. So with this film, they play it safe with the story and the structure. However, they take huge risks with some of the thematic ideas and visuals. But then with Civil War, I think they took some major risks narratively. But then in the visuals, they basically said, well, let's just make the most polished, you know, big, awesome-looking blockbuster we can. You know, like the visuals in Civil War are great, but they're not groundbreaking like they are in Doctor Strange. So I feel like that's an interesting approach. And again, I think I've said this every Marvel review that we do. Like, can we not just be happy that there's a studio out there that is making calculated risks? That, you know, even though they're not creating a Jean-Luc Godard movie every single time, they're at least, you know, willing to push the envelope. And yes, they're not going to give an auteur 100% free reign to do whatever they want. However, like you said, the fact that any studio let Scott Derrickson come up with the visuals that he did here and put the amount of money in that they needed to put in to make them work, that's saying an awful lot. I feel like we often take that for granted about Marvel.
I think absolutely. I think it's unfair to judge these movies as something, you know, that should even be considered uncommercial ever. That's not the aim here. This is populist art, you know?
Yeah, it's comic books. It's literally from the start they were made to sell bubblegum ads. You know?
You can and I think the parallel here is, you know, they are made for a broad audience, and they're made to be, yes, a little bit, they're made to be variations on the same theme, which they are, but over time, I think what you start to see is individual voices will start to shine through. And I think as a pattern is established, you know, the variations from it are what make it, you know, what start to make it stand out and make it interesting. As long as you keep it consistently entertaining every time and build a rapport with the audience so that they know what to expect, it's things like, you know, combining these characters in different ways, in different arrangements, that becomes an exciting thing to see and something that an individual director or writer gets to put their spin and their interpretation on. And obviously visually they all have their own things to bring to the table. But I think Marvel, the other thing that we're going to start to see here as we go further into an era for Marvel movies where Kevin Feige is really has the freedom to run these movies the way he wants to, and there's less constraint maybe from other areas, I think we are going to start to see a little bit more individual flair from filmmakers in these movies, and I think we saw it here a good bit, and I think it's a very promising to me that we're over the next year we are going to also get another Guardians of the Galaxy movie from James Gunn, and we're going to get a Thor movie from Taika Waititi, who's a fantastically original filmmaker that I don't think anybody would have expected would have been on the list to make a Marvel movie. So they're taking chances on people that are not. This is a lot more than just lining up a bunch of journeyman directors to come in here and churn out repetitious products. I think anybody who wants to characterize this franchise that way is not seeing the whole picture here. This is all going to be blockbuster, broad appeal stuff, but within that, there's going to be a lot of room for individual expression and voices. And to me, Doctor Strange nails it, and I think, you know, aside from the filmmaking, aside from just the direction and the visuals, you know, I think you could call the performances from all the actors in this movie a little bit straightforward. There's nothing that's totally really out there, but I think they all are really, really good at what they do. And it's just great to see a blockbuster franchise IP movie with this many really good actors in it. I mean, Benedict Cumberbatch, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Rachel McAdams, Mads Mikkelsen, Tilda Swinton, and Michael Stuhlbarg are all people that I would go see. Like, to me, those are not people that are going to show up in a dumb summer
movie. Michael Stuhlbarg's role in this movie is almost insulting. Like, marginalizes it, but he pulls it off, and it works, and it makes
have
for
a, guy,
a really nice little moment.
To have a guy that talented in a pretty small supporting role, I think says a lot about what these people are doing and that they actually care enough to go and get good actors for an even remotely significant role in these movies. And Benedict Wong, who I'm not sure I've ever seen in anything before, I think is going to end up being a good part of this.
He's great.
This franchise. As
well,
they
did such a good job of taking what could have been a troublesome character from the comics and giving him a really great reason to be there and giving him his own, you know, his own agency and his own identity. I agree with you on all fronts. Again, there's a few of those kind of like, those things that are supposed to be digestible, but for some reason hit me funny. And one of them might be Benedict Cumberbatch. And I don't know if it's his performance or the way that Stephen Strange was written. There's something that didn't fully connect with me there. There's a line later in the movie where he said, you know, he's trying to crack Wong, and he's like, well, usually people think I'm funny, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what, really? Like, have you been funny yet? There's been funny.
He does make the joke back to him that did all those people work for you?
Oh, okay, good point.
Yeah,
but that's there's something about this. He's like this weird convergence of Robert Downey Jr. and, well, really, that's it, right? You know, I feel like this was a pretty big shorthand in terms of like, well, we need our guy to have a flaw, so let's make atheist Tony Stark. Like that's kind of what he's
I don't know. I think the fact that we spend so much of this movie, you know, in his dark time, basically, you know, I think the fact that we don't see him, this is like Tony Stark if something legitimately bad happened to him and he lost everything, which we never really do see in the Iron Man movies. I mean, he remains.
He was in a cave.
He starts and ends all of those movies as a very rich and charismatic guy, and I think that that Strange in this movie, you know, starts the movie as a guy, first of all, who's probably not quite as charismatic. He's a bit more of openly kind of an asshole early on in the movie, even though he is very successful, and he very, very much transforms as a character over the course of it.
Sure.
You know, he becomes a much more, I mean, it's about a character learning humility and not just having a moment, where he flashes that humility and then goes back to being cocky and, you know, quippy again.
I think he's legitimately it's Tony Stark meets Thor, you know, where Thor at the same thing where he was.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, and although again, a lot of the times at the end of their first movie, they're really still the same character. They just have sort of in the back of their minds now, they have added this virtue to themselves, but they don't show it outwardly. And I think the Stephen Strange at the beginning of the movie is a very different character than the one at the end. And maybe they'll, you know, I don't see them sort of reversing course and making him an overly arrogant, you know, a-hole
who
doesn't care about other people anymore. Because he ends up coming back to Rachel McAdams' character by the end of the movie too, and kind of asking for forgiveness, which I think that's a very interesting thing to do in a movie, is take an alpha male character and say, hey, you're doing it wrong, you know, like be different.
Yeah. I mean, there's a line in here that basically says it's not about you.
Right.
Which, you know, it's taking Tony Stark, you know, 12 movies to slowly start to realize that. So yeah, I mean, I definitely think I agree with you that that there is a pretty extreme arc, and that by the end of the movie, I was way more comfortable with Benedict Cumberbatch in the more weathered Doctor Strange role than I was when he was, you know, the cocky pop music loving surgeon guy. You know, I think that may be the disconnect, is that he's got a gravity to him that I just never really bought as this kind of arrogant yuppie.
I think towards the end, he is a character that by the end of the movie, and when we sort of see that last shot of him, I'm like, okay, now he fits in. I get why this guy is now going to be a part of other movies.
Yes. Well, and then, again, that talking about the, you know, not most original story structure, the villain plot of this movie and several elements of this movie, they reminded me an awful lot of the Ryan Reynolds film Green Lantern. What with the, you know, the cocky, arrogant guy that gets taken down and taken down a notch and is trained to be a, you know, a part of a protector team. And then they have to stop a big evil cloud man that eats worlds,
that has
facial features.
And then
one of his buddies grows increasingly bitter and leaves the flock, and by the end of the movie, in like a stinger scene, basically makes his evil turn to set up a villain for the next. And I mean, obviously this movie pulls all those things off way more gracefully and organically and consistently than Green Lantern, but it's hard to refute those similarities, right? And I think, didn't John Spates work on the Green Lantern script, or did I just pull that out of thin air?
I will confess to knowing absolutely nothing about the Green Lantern movie, and I have.
Have you not seen it?
No.
Oh, yeah. You should watch it. Well, no, you shouldn't watch it, but it is everything I'm saying is true.
Okay, I mean, I'll take your word for it. Yeah, no, I mean, look, again, this is very clearly a lot about the structure is a blockbuster, you know, summer feeling movie, and you know, I think that's fine. We're coming into these things looking for entertainment and escapism, and I have fun with it. And to me, this is, again, we've had this discussion in a lot of the podcasts we've had about the DC releases. Those movies, you could argue, are very unconventional in their structure. And I think they're not very enjoyable movies a lot of the time. I don't like them. They make me feel bad when I watch them. But good for them, I guess, for being original. But the question is, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to, like, wake me up to the, you know, harsh realities of real life through comic book art? Or are they actually trying to entertain me and sell me a Blu-ray later, you know? And they're both perfectly valid goals to have. I personally enjoy watching these Marvel movies, as conventional as they might be, a lot more than I enjoy watching probably what are slightly less conventional DC movies that make me feel bad about myself and about the universe. But I think, Ben, to kind of go in a different direction for Marvel, you know, what did you think about? We talk a lot about villains not having the time to be developed. One of the things that they did in this movie that I thought was kind of clever and might be a forward-thinking solution to that is they spent the whole movie, presumably the first movie of a new franchise, developing a character with us in Mordo that by the final stinger we realize is going to be a villain. So now when we get to Doctor Strange 2, whenever that happens, we're going to have a well-developed villain who, you know, has some history with the character that we've already seen play out. Maybe this was sort of a more conscious effort to develop a villain for down the road. I don't know if that's what they were thinking of, but it certainly seems like it will result in that possibly.
Well, that's why I brought up the Green Lantern similarities. The big mean cloud and the other similarities were almost a joke, but yeah, this is very similar to the Sinestro arc in that movie, and I do feel like it goes similarly too far. I didn't need him to walk away at the end or to turn. I could have ended this movie with just a little bit of conflict, inner conflict with. I mean, it's not Baron Mordo's movie, you know.
It's
so
unnecessary.
I don't need it. I don't need a full arc. I'm okay with, you know, with him still questioning. I felt like that walking away beat at the end was so much of a hammer letting us know, like, well, there's your villain next time, so.
I do think the stinger was unnecessary.
And I didn't even stay for the stinger, but a coworker told me about it, and that's literally what happens in Green Lantern. Like, the Sinestro is kind of jaded by the end of the movie proper, and then in a stinger, he grabs a yellow ring and turns into Sinestro.
Maybe they didn't want to have to pay Benjamin Bratt to come back for the second movie.
I mean, he commands a hefty sum. I
can't believe, like, that's a pretty big name for, like, literally he's in the movie for, like, 5 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, and he had some weird streetball lingo. Like, I was like, what is this guy? Is he... He's like a guy that's traveled through, like, shamans, and then he's like, pass me the ball, I'm going to play some hoops in the streets, I'm 50 years old.
Yeah, listen, I realize you just made my chakra come out of my body, but can I just do layups again? That's really all I'm looking for here. I have to wrap up here, actually, but I do want to talk about one more thing, which is the mid-credits stinger. This is probably the thing that makes people that don't like the interconnected MCU and the mixing of franchises grown. But I geeked out and I loved it. And I've been excited about the third Thor movie for quite some time. And to have a little setup for it here and to have Doctor Strange, you know, confirmed basically to us to be playing some role in that movie, I was just geeked, man. It, whether you want to call it a trailer for another movie or not, I loved it.
It got me so excited. I'm already so excited for Ragnarok, and that just, and like on the way home, I was like, you know, if you replace Silver Surfer with Thor, since they're both kind of cosmic characters, it sounds like Thor Ragnarok is almost going to be kind of a Defenders movie, because they have Doctor Strange and the Hulk, and they're just missing Submariner. And like my wife was like, "What the hell are you talking about?"
But
I was so excited.
No, it's the perfect the perfect mix of the, you know, having this like all knowing wise cosmic character, and then Doctor Strange, who is this sort of like, you know, involving this like ancient mysticism, and then you just have a big giant pissed off green monster.
Yeah.
Mixing those three is,
and then you throw Loki in there
to it.
And Loki,
yeah.
Hey, Loki is your Submariner in the Defenders. He's the kind of like, you know, the heel face tweener back and forth prince guy. Oh my
Absolutely.
God!
Absolutely.
I got to write an essay about this.
Yeah, I know. I definitely loved it. I thought it was fun.
Me too.
Probably one of their better stingers that they've done in a while for these movies, so I had fun with that.
Well, one last thing before I let you go. What do you think of the early Peter Gabriel Genesis-influenced musical score by Michael Giacchino?
Man, I loved it.
It's prog rock.
I think especially the credits at the end where they kind of bring in the sitar and stuff, it is a recognizable, hummable theme, and there's a lot of variations on it. There's the big orchestral versions of it. There's the kind of thumping action version, and then in the closing credits, again, you get kind of the Indian, Asian-sounding version of it. And, man, I'm just so pumped that Michael Giacchino is going to be doing Marvel movies. I think he's going to be perfect for it. I think he's going to give us those recognizable themes that we want from a superhero movie, and God willing that this man ends up doing the next Avengers movie and ties those things back together and brings them in into a single thing, which is what I have been hoping to see somebody do since this thing started. So I think it'll be there's probably nothing I'm more excited about with Marvel movies than Michael Giacchino's involvement.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So it's another good one. Do you have 2 seconds to throw this into your ranking?
Yeah, you know, I would say it's hard for me to go through all the way, but I think out of the sort of more recent crop, to me, I think this is better than Ant-Man. I still, to me, nothing has topped Guardians of the Galaxy. I just think it's so great and so strong and makes me feel so much. But this is a very, very good debut. I would put it right up there with I think the first Thor movie. I think that's probably a pretty good comparison. So in the upper half of the single character movies for sure.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. It's definitely above average Marvel, and it's not in the elite tier for me either. But yeah, I had a great time with it, and I wish I had seen it in IMAX 3D.
Me
and
too.
I kind of feel like going back just for that. It's not a movie I necessarily feel like I need to see again in the theater, except for that one part of it.
If you could just let me go back for a
I could pay half price and just go back for the soul punch travel.
Yeah, when he opens the eye, basically, I want
Lord.
To start.
Yeah.
I want to put 3D glasses on.
Yeah, agree. All right, man. Well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, man.
For Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear,
rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.